Good morning, good afternoon, wherever this may be. Today, I'm Bill Stump. I'm the extension plant pathologist, and then Caitlin Youngquist will also be participating on this presentation. We're going to talk about field burning. I mean, we get a lot of questions about field burning since it's still fairly allowed in Wyoming in terms of controlling plant residues. And we're going to talk about, I'm going to talk about the impacts on crop diseases, and then Caitlin's going to talk about how this affects soil nutrients. So for Wyoming standpoints, it's mostly going to be burning corn and barley stubble probably in those kind of production scenarios. So I'm going to cover some of the diseases that may be found in those cropping situations, and how we're going to talk about is this a good disease management tool. And then Caitlin's going to talk about, you know, is there potential loss of nutrients in the soil, and how does this impact our soil health long-term when you're burning. So it's no surprise that most of our foliar diseases that we deal with will survive in crop residue. So that's why crop burning has been a top time-honored tradition in terms of trying to manage diseases. Because most of the foliar diseases, and I'll show a quick life cycles and how this comes about, and some vascular diseases will survive for a number of years in crop residue, sometimes up to 2 years. And typically we will kind of manage that by proper crop rotations and sometimes with tillage by incorporating that residue into the soil. But the problem that we're facing now is with the adoption of minimum tillage systems in a lot of areas in the country, we're starting to see an uprise in certain foliar diseases because we're not managing that residue. Also in Wyoming can be an issue, especially with the corn, barley, if they're in rotations. There are several diseases that actually will infect both crops, and therefore that can be a real problem. So in barley, this is just a few of the diseases, the more major diseases we might find in Wyoming that will survive in crop residue. And some of these are bacterial and some are fungal. Spot blotch, scab or head blight are both fungal. We have black chaff, or bacterial leaf streak, which is bacterial diseases, net blotch, which is fungal, powdery mildew, of course, is fungal, and then septoria is also a fungal disease that can all survive in barley residues. And this just shows real quick, I'm not gonna spend a lot of time on this, this is septoria leaf spot, the life cycle, but if you look over here, survives on infected crop debris. So what it does is it forms these fruiting bodies here, these conspicuous black dots here, our fungal fruiting bodies, and that can survive in crop debris. And as that lays on the soil surface the following spring, those little black circles or little black dots can start producing spores that can infect the new crop. And so that's how the life cycles will continue, and that's how the pathogen will persist in the absence of the host. Same thing with scab or head blight of barley, which affects both corn and barley. In the barley, it infects the heads. And so you get these shriveled heads and these white heads. You'll get these orange spore masses, things like that. But it'll also produce those little fruiting bodies. And then as that falls into the soil, like either infected seed or spike tissue or just little bits of straw, it can survive. And then the following year, those spores are produced and infect that crop, which could be corn or maybe another barley crop. And in corn, it causes a stalk rot. Gibberella's stalk rot is the same pathogen, just causes a different disease in a different crop. But therefore, if you have these in your crop rotations and we have a lot of residue, this disease can be a problem in both cropping systems. So in corn diseases that will survive in residue, again, we just talked about all these stalk rots. There's a fair number of bacterial diseases that will survive in residue and some foliar diseases. And again, most of these are becoming a problem because some growers are going to continuous corn, and Wyoming's no exception, where we have a lot of growers growing continuous corn and also adopted with minimum tillage. Therefore, if you get this huge buildup of residues on the soil surface, and a lot of these pathogens can really survive and do quite well. We've seen an outbreak in some of these bacterial diseases as well, again, because people are going to minimum tillage and continuous cropping. And again, the bacteria will survive in the crop residue and infect that crop then again the following year. So typically when we do crop rotations and in coupled with some kind of tillage implements, we can eliminate that inoculum source by burying that residue and things like that, or using a different crop host where that inoculum will eventually just kind of peter out. So there's always been talk about, you know, how well does burning then work for disease management? And if you look back in the historical records, you know, they've been burning crops for as almost as long as man has been tilling the soil. You know, it was a great way to get rid of crop residues and things like that. But the problem is, I dived into the research, there really wasn't a lot of research on this. And most of the reports of efficacy are mostly anecdotal, you know, like so-and-so did it for years and it did great and things like that. But there wasn't a lot of research assigned to it. And a lot of our examples comes from grass seed production in the Pacific Northwest. Historically, those guys always burn their fields since the late 40s. And recently, they've because of you know, more people going in the urban areas and rural areas, there's a lot more people out against burning. So they are starting to not burn as much. And that's why some of these seed companies have actually moved to Wyoming so they continue those production practices. But the problem is we've seen a lot of inconsistent results. When I look at the research, you know, the results aren't that great. And the problem is when you think about a burning field is it's just you get inadequate duration of the field sometimes. If there's a stiff wind or something like that, or it's really dry, that crop will burn really quickly. And so therefore the burn is not long enough to be lethal to a lot of the inoculum sources. Also, you'll get non-uniform burns. You know, if you've got a lot of green weeds in your field and things like that, or little swales and things like that, wet areas, you get very inconsistent burns. It's not very uniform. It's kind of like here where we had these big forest fires and they report like this area of all these forests being burned up in the Medicine Bow National Forest. And when I actually drove through that area a couple of weeks ago, I was kind of surprised. It was kind of a mosaic. And the same thing happens in your field. You get areas where you just don't get very good burns, especially if you've got a little topography and wet areas. And again, with the green weeds, you know, it's just kind of can be inconsistent. And when you have the propagules right on the soil surface, fire is really effective actually against most fungi, bacteria, nematodes, insects, and weed seeds. I mean, if it's exposed directly to the flames, it will do a great job on managing those pests. So here's some research, and again, this stuff, I had to find some really old papers and take some pictures of it. This is from, well, it must have been the late 70s. This looked at the incidence of blind seed disease in Oregon on perennial ryegrass. And so this is a fungal disease. It was fairly, pretty much limiting in terms of producing perennial ryegrass seed in Oregon, and it would infect the seeds. An infected seed then would fall to the ground and it would be in the stubble and that would reinfect the crops the following years. So you can see here on the far left from 44 to 49 before they instigated burning, they had some pretty, these are the different levels of infestation of the disease. They had quite a bit of disease incidence of this blind seed disease. Once they started burning though, they really saw a marked reduction in the amount of disease in those fields. So this was a really good example, one of the few examples of really good efficacy of using flame and burning of the crop residues to manage a particular plant disease. This is a table looking at various, again, these are all grass seed production systems in the Pacific Northwest. This is in Western Oregon. We've got the grasses here, perennial ryegrass, tall fescue, bluegrass, Chewings fescue, orchard grass, and then the year the burning started. So again, these are all really old production practices in the late 40s, early 50s. And somebody actually did go through and kind of take note over the years of how much disease management they got. And they got good control on a number of different diseases. Blind seed disease that we talked about, ergot, which we do have problems in Wyoming, silver top, some nematodes. So we had some pretty good control with that with field burning. And then there were some other ones that were partial control. You know, it just didn't work as well. A lot of fungal diseases, rust and things like that, where you know, this kind of system didn't work all that great. So again, inconsistent results, but for certain diseases, it worked pretty well. And then this was pretty interesting too. This just showed the effect of stubble burning on the viability of ergot sclerosure. I did find a specific ergot presentation here in terms of research on it. And they found that if you have the ergot, which is this, which is the survival structure of the fungus, which is like, they look like mice poop. Actually, they're sclerosure, they're ramified fungal tissue. So they're very small, about the size of a grain small grain. And so it can fall to the ground. And then the following year, those will sometimes produce little tiny mushrooms that will produce spores that will start the disease cycle. So they found that the sclerotia that are on the ground, 88% of those actually were viable the following year and were able to germinate, produce primary inoculum. Now, if they were on the surface of the soil, right on the top, and then there was a fire, they had 0% germination. So effectively eliminated all that sclerotia with that fire. But then you notice here too, once it starts getting buried under the soil, because soil is a great insulator against fire, even if it's buried just 1 centimeter under the stubble, you still had 25% of those ergots that were viable after a fire. And if you double the burial depth to 2 centimeters, 63% of those things are still viable. So again, it just shows if there's a little bit of soil mixing or even under that stubble a little bit, it's just not going to get exposed to that fire. Now, again, if it was under the on the surface with some stubble or trash or no cover, again, it's directly exposed to that fire and it directly controls that. So the bottom line is what I'm saying is, you know, again, there hasn't been a lot of research, especially in Wyoming, how this would impact diseases. And, you know, I think it can work in some instances. And I've had some growers that told me they have burned, especially to control ergot. And, you know, if it's allowed in your area, you know, why not? I mean, I guess it's something worthwhile. I know a lot of times burning is under a lot of scrutiny, especially where you get more people moving out into the country, but Wyoming thankfully doesn't have as much of that yet still. And so it can be viable for some of these diseases. I don't know about the scab example. I couldn't find any examples of that one. But again, anytime you can get rid of stubble and things like that. Now, I know the soils people get kind of mad at me a lot of times because I want to emphasize that minimum tillage, the benefits of that basically outweigh the negative effects of increased diseases. So I always want to kind of leave that too, where, you know, the impacts of minimum till on your soil is so good that, you know, a lot of people will deal with a little bit more diseases, whether they use fungicides or things like that, or just use a prescription type tillage every few years or something like that can probably greatly improve some of these systems. And that's all I have, I think, Caitlin, if you want to take over from here then.
Thanks, Bill. I appreciate that. If you'll stop sharing your screen, I'll start sharing mine here.
Okay, stop sharing.
I would like to explore some of the soil impacts of field burning. As Bill explained, there are some implications with disease control when burning crop residue, but as a soil scientist, I'm particularly interested in what nutrients are lost and how it impacts soil carbon. So I'm going to share a little bit with you on that topic. So first, I think it's important to understand what kind of nutrients are in crop residue. And for this example, I'm going to use barley and wheat straw and corn stover. So you can see here, I averaged out a few numbers. I pulled some numbers from a variety of different resources and averaged them out for the purposes of our exploration today. So we're looking at barley and wheat straw has an average of about 0.7% nitrogen, about 0.15% P2O5, and about 1.4% K2O, 0.2% sulfur, and about 41% carbon. And you'll see that across that there's a range of values here, but again, corn has averaged a little higher nitrogen, P2O5, potassium, and a little lower sulfur and about the same carbon. So keep that in mind as we go through these numbers here and look at what kinds of nutrients are lost from burning. So if we burn the crop residue, what we're looking at is a greater than 90% loss of nitrogen. Whatever nitrogen was in that residue, almost all of it's gone. About 20% of our phosphorus, about 35% of our potassium, about 75% of our sulfur, and greater than 90% of our carbon are gone. They're up in smoke once we burn that crop residue. So if we use those numbers, the average nutrient content of either barley or wheat or corn, and we think about what percent is actually lost during the burning process, loss on ignition, then we can extrapolate to get some numbers for pounds of nutrient lost per ton of crop residue. So for every 1 ton of corn residue that's burned, approximately 23 pounds of nitrogen is going to be lost. About 1 pound of P2O5, about 11 pounds of K2O, and about 2 pounds of sulfur and 738 pounds of carbon. And you can see there's similar numbers there for wheat and barley. So consider that in order to figure out what's the loss on ignition, we have to take into account the amount of nutrient content of the crop residue and how much is actually lost during burning. Now, if we take that a little bit further and we want to look at what the actual cost is, using fertilizer numbers or prices from the last 6 months, we can look at, again, taking the numbers for loss on ignition, the pounds of nutrient that are lost per ton of residue that's burned, and we can use those average nutrient prices, nutrient values. And then if we make an assumption of 2 tons per acre are burned, just to give us a number to work with, that means that if we assume 2 tons per acre are burned of wheat or barley straw, that costs us just over $10 in terms of nitrogen loss, about 23 cents of phosphorus, just over $3 of potassium, almost $3 of sulfur, for a total of about $17, and a little bit more for corn. So keep this in mind, we're assuming 2 tons per acre are burned and we're using the fertilizer prices here in the top left corner. Now, obviously these numbers will change depending on how much is actually burned and what the fertilizer prices are. But this gives you an idea of the estimated cost per acre that you're losing when you burn wheat, barley, or corn stubble. So what happens if you bale it? Again, go back to our previous numbers on the nutrient content of crop residue that I showed you earlier, right? So we have to start with those numbers. And then if we look at the value of nutrients, instead of doing it per acre, we're looking here per ton of straw. So because 100% of the straw is removed the nutrients are removed when the straw is baled, we don't leave anything behind in the ashes, so to speak, it changes our numbers a little bit, right? So for wheat and barley, we're looking at about $13 per ton of straw is the cost of the nutrients removed. And for corn, about $17, right? Now that's per ton, not per acre. So if we, again, estimate about 2 tons per acre, we're looking at about $60 per acre of nutrients that are removed when you bale and sell the straw. I noticed this year in the Bighorn Basin, a lot more barley straw was baled and removed from the field than I've seen in the past. And I assume that has to do with drought and fires and high demand for feed in other parts of the country and high hay prices. So that was interesting to see here. And just keep that in mind that there is a cost of the nutrients removed when you bale that straw. Perhaps more importantly, I want to know, what is the carbon worth? And those of you who are soil managers, you know that soil carbon has a high impact or very important impact on soil function. Soil armor, protecting the soil from extreme temperatures, cold or hot, protecting it from wind and water erosion, very important in nutrient cycling and increasing the water infiltration rate, especially in heavy clay soils or compacted soils. More organic matter will help the water infiltrate more uniformly and will make irrigation more efficient. It will really increase your water holding capacity in sandy soils, which is really important here in the basin as well. And then that supports the microbial life, which is very important for nutrient cycling, for disease resistance, and for healthy functioning soil. So there's a lot of ways to quantify the value of soil carbon, But I think the important thing to remember is that it has a big impact on the health and function of your soil. And whatever we can do to increase the amount of carbon in the soil is really important. And it's really about playing the long game. It's about a long-term investment in the health and function of your soil or of your farm. So what we do know is that about a third of the carbon in the straw will stay in the soil if it's not burned or removed in terms of and baled and removed, right? And straw is about 40% carbon. And you can see here in this diagram that, like I said, about a third of the carbon will stay in the soil and become soil organisms. It'll become stable organic matter. It will become sort of part of the soil biological system. And about two thirds will end up back in the atmosphere as carbon dioxide as that organic matter is broken down by the soil organisms and they release carbon dioxide over time. So using those numbers, we know that about 264 pounds of carbon per ton of straw will stay in the soil. So if we assume 2 tons of straw per acre, as we talked about earlier, and about 2 million pounds of soil in the top 6 inches per acre, that means we have a potential for a 0.5% increase in soil organic matter over 10 years if we leave those 2 tons of straw per acre and don't burn it and don't bale and remove it. It may not sound like a lot, but when you think about here in the Bighorn Basin, when we only have 1 to 1.5% organic matter anyway in our soil, increasing it by another 0.5% can have a significant impact on the function and the health of the soil. And so again, it's playing the long game, but it's really thinking about when you burn stubble or when you bale it and remove it, what are the costs? There is somewhat of a cost based on the nutrients lost, but perhaps a more significant cost is the carbon that's lost. An interesting factoid for you here, that a 1% increase in soil organic matter over an acre allows that acre to hold 20,000 more gallons of water per acre. So again, in these dry climates, you can really increase irrigation efficiency and crop water use efficiency to have more organic matter in the soil. So a reminder about soil carbon loss versus soil carbon gain. The best ways to lose the carbon out of your soil, to lose the money out of your checking account, so to speak, is disturbance, tillage, crop residue removal, either through burning or baling and removing it, and excessive fertilizer use. And the ways that we can increase the carbon in our soil or put those deposits back into that checking account is high residue crops, not removing any residue, leaving it there, minimal disturbance, and incorporating grazing and compost or manure. So those are some things just to think about in terms of your own soil management and residue management on your farm. I hope this information is useful to you, and please do join us for the question and answer session later this week if you have any thoughts on this or would like more clarification. Thank you.